going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
That's right, it is the Going Deep podcast. I am Donovan Bennett, and I want to go deep on all things soccer. One, some big news, Bill Manning out at both TFC and the Toronto Argonauts, but we know TFC was his baby, so that has a real impact on what the club might do moving forward. So we'll get the reaction of Devang Desai, who has been not only covering Bill Manning's tenure at TFC, but it was somewhat critical of the decisions they've made. So I want to see his reaction. Since Cicero has been holding feet to the fire in terms of leadership in sport for quite some time. I think Sid is at his best when he's asking reasonable questions about the people who are leading sports teams. So I actually want to go through an exercise and give him the names of a bunch of different managers and get his knee-jerk reaction. Play along at home. Let us know how you feel. Hit us up on social. But you'll get the unvarnished reaction from Sid on the Bill Manning news, on the leadership of someone like Jesse Marsh and our Canadian men's national team, John Herdman, who no longer is leading our men's national team, is trying to lead TFC, so on and so forth. So it is a full soccer edition of the Going Deep podcast. We'll start with Sid, then we'll transition to Devang. Let's go deep on the summer of soccer with Sid Sixera. All right, Sydney, I don't need to lead you to water. You have many, I won't say takes, many perspectives in the football mind of yours. So I'm just going to give you a name and you take it wherever you'd like based off of your curiosity and based off of your understanding of the game at this point. Let's start with the news that just broke, which is football news in both sense of the word in this country and city. Bill Manning out at TFC. I don't know if John Herdman cost him his job or Chad Kelly cost him his job, but the Bill Manning news, your reaction is what?
I didn't know that. I had no idea Manning did it. This just, like, how recent was the news? Like an hour ago?
It just broke.
Holy cow. See, this is the pod I come to for the breaking news. Look, I guess Forge FC have some pull here. They, you know, that's the final death knell. I think a lot of mistakes have been made over the last couple of years with Toronto FC. I really do. And in other aspects of MLSC, no doubt. But you can't, the Bob Bradley hire started this spiral. And it got worse and worse and worse. And unfortunately, the John Herdman magic lasted way shorter than we thought it would. Toronto FC are in a position where a CPL team is now kind of handing them their hat. If there was ever a result where you're going to fire Bill Manning, that's probably it. That's probably it. And the feeling I got from people who knew Bill Manning and who have talked to Bill Manning a lot is there's an element of Bill Manning who thought he invented soccer. And at some point, that arrogance doesn't do you any service when you can't beat anybody and you can't defend. And your highest profile players that cost the most are looking pretty average. And I have to say, one of the first things, having just heard this, that comes into my mind is it's time for Keith Pelley to throw around some of the furniture here and make some noise. And I like it. I like it. Might want to start doing that with the Leafs. But right now with MLSE and Toronto FC, enough. Enough of this garbage. And at some point, you got to make a right call. And Bill Manning hasn't made a right call in a long time. And that includes Herdman. I don't know if Herdman's the right guy for this. John Herdman hasn't had elite-level club experience in his life, ever. And MLSC brought him into a league with some teeth, with a profile. And right now, nothing's going right. You had some nice moments early with Herdman and TFC, and Insigne hugged him, and everything was great. And we're back to where we started. They can't defend. Insigne's in and out. He looks disinterested, and they're not winning. So kind of more micro, I agree with it, with Toronto FC and Bill Manning. From a macro, you know, it's Keith Pelley's getting to work, and I like it.
You mentioned Pelley, part of the transition. TFC general manager Jason Hernandez, Argos general manager Pinball Clemens, both now will report directly to Keith Pelley. So the next name I give you on that list is John Herdman. And he's, the ink on his contract is still wet. It's a real interesting time to evaluate him on two fronts. One, based off of what we see with TFC, and it's tough to evaluate an MLS manager because they're the one league that doesn't stop for international tournaments. But two, given the way the national team is playing in this country, I give you the name John Herdman, and what comes to mind?
John Herdman's a good politician. Like the more I'm learning about the John Herdman Canada soccer experience is interesting in that there are people inside Canada soccer. Remember the Nations League? Was it last year now? Where they lost it, and then Herdman went on a, you know, we don't have money to travel rant and things of that nature. Apparently he did, according to some sources inside Canada soccer. And John Herdman was pretty good at spinning a narrative. And as inspirational as Herdman's tenure was with Canada soccer, this is a guy who leveraged a move from our women's team to the men's team. This is a guy who, the second the going got tough, the second he was gone. Let's frame John Herdman properly here. He's a businessman. And he's never done it at this level anywhere. And MLS is tougher than most other leagues because you're drawing different types of players. Like your infrastructure needs to know what's going on in Central American football in terms of youth players and in Mexico and in other parts of CONCACAF. It is a wide net. And you just can't, there's very few MLS teams that can just designate a player their way through it. You need strong infrastructure. You need guidance at times. And you need to bring in the right people because it's tricky. You got to stretch the dollar. And he's not, it's not going well for Herdman. And again, his MO is the second it gets a little rough, the seas get rocky, he's gone. We'll see where this goes. But I am not expecting Herdman to be with that club in 18 months if Bill Manning's gone. Because John Herdman looks ahead. How many rumors? Remember the New Zealand soccer rumor with John Herdman? Remember that?
Of course.
Which
time?
Where did that come? Where did that come from? Every time he rang that bell, he got a contract. You know, and I'm sure life with the All Whites, in terms of their soccer team, that's their nickname, would have been great. But like, he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. John Herdman has done a very efficient job of crafting his image. But there are folks that will tell you, it's a lot of other things going on there. And he's not going to be able to hide from the TFC thing. This is a high-profile job, a former MLS Cup champion, multiple-time MLS Cup finalists. Now what can you do with it? I still respect John Herdman a lot. But at some point, the results are going to speak for themselves. We'll see where this goes.
Jesse Marsh.
Jesse Marsh is enjoying a moment here, and it has nothing to do with Canada soccer. His relationship with USA Soccer was poor, very bad. And he went down there in USA Soccer's backyard and embarrassed them. Embarrassed them. Jesse Marsh would have loved to have been head coach of the U.S. men's soccer team. Loved. Didn't happen. Because they are days of our lives. And at some point, when you remove yourself from that, sometimes you find a better place. It happens. And I am elated for Jesse Marsh and for our Canadian national men's team that they found each other. Sometimes you just find each other at the right time. You've been through some bad relationships, some bad dating experiences. Maybe you went on Bachelor in Paradise. It didn't work out. But you go home and you find something different and you find something new. And that's what Jesse Marsh has done, to the point where Canada Soccer today, I believe today, had to put out a statement saying Jesse Marsh is committed to the program and has no interest in the now vacant U.S. men's soccer head coach job. That's how far we've come. And by the way, U.S. soccer, good luck with Jurgen Klopp. You can't afford Jurgen Klopp to come over and make a speech to your guys, let alone work with them. That's the biggest pipe dream I've ever seen. Jurgen Klopp is going to take over U.S. He left Liverpool, and he's going to go to U.S. men's soccer. Sure. Got it. No problems there.
They had another Jurgen in the past.
Yeah, how did that work out? The biggest fraud in managerial history, Jurgen Klinsmann. Biggest fraud. How much money did TFC give Jurgen Klinsmann? It was insane. For nothing. Absolutely nothing. And he screwed up Germany in 2006 at home hosting that World Cup. They should have won that World Cup. But Jurgen Klinsmann's a joke. Anyway, I'm happy for Jesse Marsh. I'm happy for Canada Soccer. I'm happy they found each other. Is it all going to be roses? No. There's going to be some bumps in the road here. But I love that they had this initial moment. And we have some proof that there was much more here than maybe we saw even in 2022. And I'm excited for both of them.
That brings me to my next name, Greg Berhalter.
I wish I could just sue my way into a managerial job like Greg Berhalter. I just wish I could. The only reason they brought him back was to avoid a lawsuit. The only way. It's the most, U.S. soccer is the most dysfunctional. I saw a former player of his with the national team do an interview on CBS Sports last night. And apparently Greg Berhalter, if you play for him for the national team, every time you come into the building, you take a swab test. There's a blood test. There's an exercise test. There's a cardio test. There's like a battery of things you have to do just to get in the door. And if one of those is wrong, you have to meet with him. Like, that's not a national team. That's a police state. Who the hell is Greg Berhalter to demand any of this? I wouldn't know if I hit him with my car. And I love soccer. Greg Berhalter had this ridiculous, mesmerizing, spellbinding power. Like Luke Skywalker just waving his hand, take me to Jabba now. And Berhalter had all of that with no resume of consequence. None. And he embarrassed himself at home. That team had no work ethic. They didn't want to play for him. They didn't want to play for each other. They take responsibility as well. I'm not just putting this on Berhalter, but that guy has no business steering a national team. Stay in your lane, man. The crew or wherever you came from, you stay right there. Save the crew. Stay right there. He had no business. And the best part is USA Soccer went back to him and got exactly what they deserved. Clown show. Absolute clown show. The guy was keeping score of the other game in the final group stage match of the Copa because that's how he believes he's getting through. He's the guy who looks at the scoreboard. He doesn't believe in his team. Clown show. Canada got the better American coach. Hands down.
Well, you mentioned you don't think Klopp is interested.
No!
I think they could come up with the money.
No! Do you know how much money Jurgen Klopp is going to ask for the United States when the United States hosts the World Cup?
Many people envision
he's making more than Jokic. He's making more than
the United States.
Are you kidding?
Lots of money. So,
are you
so,
kidding?
Well, here are the names that American supporters have floated out there: Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola.
Oh my God!
And you're not having any of it.
That is not the job people think it is. You know why? Because they're average as a team. They're average as a team. This was not Germany, who couldn't find their feet hosting this Euro, and everyone's lining up to take their shot, even though they look weird. This is not that. Everyone knows the talent they got on that team, and past Pulisic a little bit, it's mid. Jurgen Klopp left Liverpool. You are going to have to give him NBA, like, first apron money on the cap to be able to draw him away. First off, everyone on Merseyside outside of Everton fans will hate his guts for that, because everyone's under the impression he needs a break. That's the first thing. Second, you can't afford him. Third, if you were able to afford him and he goes over there and looks what's under the hood, he's not taking that job. He's gone from Dortmund to Liverpool, and I guarantee you he's been offered better jobs at Liverpool. And he stayed. The self-worth that USA Soccer believes they have is laughable. Canada's the better job. But Jurgen Klopp's going over there to watch Winston McKinney and Pulisic run around as if they're consequential. Give me a break.
What about Pep? He coached the Celtics to a championship.
Yes, he did.
Did he do the same thing with the U.S. men's national team?
Yes, he did. He ran the best triangle I've ever seen. Yes. He was the best assistant coach in NBA history. No question about it. Pep's got a job last time I checked. Pep's going to leave Manchester City for the U.S. men's national team. Really? Really? That is the equivalent of Paul Maurice saying, I need Davos. I need to run Davos right now. Paul, you just won the Stanley Cup. I got to go to Davos. That's the exact comparison. There's no dumber people than USA Soccer people, because they don't watch the game. And they'll go on television and say, with a straight face, Pulisic is up there with Ronaldo and Messi. I've seen it. I've seen them do it. That Fox broadcast, it was criminal in how ill-prepared they were. Criminal. But now people are going to convince me USA Soccer can pull a rabbit out of the hat. You told on yourself a while ago. It's not happening. I wasn't born yesterday. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard, that Pep Guardiola is going to take over that job. Stupidity.
Okay, I'll give you a manager who is very good as an analyst on international tournaments, might be going back to that role. Roberto Martinez.
No guts. Zero guts. A coward. He's a coward. Because, like people before him, he believed if he took Ronaldo off the field as a sub, he'd be fired. So he wasn't going to do that. He has no stones. None. He had none on Belgium. Belgium should have won two tournaments. Portugal should have won this tournament. He has no... Let me ask you something. How many guys in the history of Wigan Athletic who were fired went on to coach high-level international soccer? How many guys? Wigan. This guy in a meeting room must be at a level I've never seen, because he is awful. None of his subs make sense. He was not prepared to start that tournament. His friendlies were not any level of preparation that was needed, because he changed his mind the second he got to Euro 2024. He's the biggest fraud in soccer managerial circles. Roberto Martinez. Fraud. And I am looking forward to the day he's not running the Portuguese national team. Stay on TV where he belongs. That's the job. He can talk his way in any situation and out of any situation. Let him go on TV. One of the worst international managers I've ever seen. You know what? He should run USA Soccer. Roberto Martinez should go to the States. Match made in heaven. Match made in heaven. Go. Right now. I'll pay for the flight. I don't know if WestJet's still working. I'll take another airline. I'll pay for the flight. Idiot. Roberto Martinez. They didn't. Portugal hadn't gone three straight games without scoring since 1997. And we had Pauleta, who was a fraud. And in the biggest tournament I've ever seen for Portugal, because that roster could have won twice. This idiot goes three straight games without scoring a goal. Three. Moron. Go to the States. They're waiting for you.
That energy was similar to what supporters had about a week ago, for my next manager for you, Gareth Southgate.
Oh, Gareth Southgate. You know what I've learned? And it's taken me a few years to learn this. You cannot rip a manager at a high-level international tournament until you see how it ends for them. It's fool's gold. Never do it. I don't care how a team looks early. It's irrelevant. How do they go out? In England, all they had to do was rope-a-dope and stick around. Because Harry Kane has been one of the worst players in the tournament. And no one's framing him that way, but he has been. And the other guys, it's very similar to Portugal. They've had to work around that. And England found their way slowly the last two games. They got better. This new system, three center backs for Roberto Martinez, it's working. And they're getting better every game to the point where I think they might win Sunday. Gareth Southgate is the best English manager I've ever seen in my life. That includes Bobby Robson. And his resume is airtight. Three major semifinals, two finals, both in the European Championship. That's insane. First English manager to get to a final on foreign soil? That's insane. And he took a lot of garbage, man. A lot. These tournaments, you got to be really careful. I don't care how you look at any point. How does it end? The only team I saw that won the whole thing, where you could still maybe criticize a little bit, was the 2016 Portugal team, because there was a bit of luck there. Don't get me wrong. I'm good with it. But I understand people's criticisms. Wait till the tournament ends. Gareth Southgate is the best English manager I've ever seen in my life at this level. Not even close. To manage the egos, to manage the press, to manage everything that comes with it is enormous. And he is skilled. And England better make sure he's motivated for that World Cup in 2026, because I can understand if he's not. He got stuff thrown at him after the Slovakia game. Thrown at him. And the final group stage game against Slovenia. Thrown at him. They were in a final 3 years ago. Thrown at him. Stuff was being tossed left and right. He is fantastic. And I think the British press are eating a lot of crow right now, and they need to do it. Because some of the stuff that guy had to deal with a resume. If he's a new manager, that's different. But he had a resume. Was unfair. Very unfair. And I'm glad he's in the final.
We'll switch international sports before I let you go. Give you a duo of Rowan Barrett and Jordi Fernandez. We've talked about what this roster might be for 4 years. Now it is set. And they had an exhibition against the United States on Sportsnet. And so you can evaluate the group. Rowan Barrett, Jordi Fernandez. Go.
Well, listen, Rowan Barrett specifically for making sure guys committed when they had to. Gets an A++ because it's never really happened, or not since 2000, with Canada basketball. Jordi Fernandez, I really like him. I would say this. I know he likes to shoot from the hip with the press. I think you got to dial it in a little bit. We have more NBA. We're the only team with more NBAers than Canada in that tournament on the men's side is the USA. They're seasoned pros on that team, and they play for hard coaches. You got to bring it in a little bit if you're Jordi Fernandez. I remember some of those huddles last year at the Worlds, and I remember some of the press conferences. Just bring it in. and I think they'll be fine, and they'll medal. I'm concerned you lose some guys early. So that's my only concern with Fernandez, because some of these guys are the best basketball players on earth. You got to talk to them like that. Not all the time, but most of the time, because they don't have to be here. And our history says we're thankful we're here, or they're here. So I like Jordy a lot. Let's see where it goes. But he's got a real shot. That team's got a real shot. Looking forward to it.
And lastly, the Daily Double. What is a friend if they don't upset you? Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro.
If Ross Atkins is the GM at this trade deadline coming up July 30th, and I have no reason to think he won't be, buckle up. Buckle up. Because I don't think MLSE or Rogers or anyone in this city are in the business of sending people home to earn their money early. I think if you work for them, you work for them. I think that's why Shanahan's still there. I mean, you can't hide what's gone on here. They haven't won a playoff game, and in an expanded playoff format, that's way worse. And even Ben Nicholson-Smith's article yesterday on their draft history, as we approach the draft this weekend, it's not good. It's not good. So there's no defending what's going on here. And I think they're going to re-sign Vladdy and Bozgan. And they need to make this work. And they need to hope Vladdy is the guy, because I don't know if he's the guy. And we go from here. They better hope Rodgers is patient. And Rodgers has been in the past. They better hope. Because there's some guys in that organization who can take over a team tomorrow. Why they haven't, I'm not sure. But it is, I would hazard to say, as we close this out, I used to think the Leafs were the most puzzling team in the city. I don't think that's the case anymore. I think it's the Jays. And kind of where this is, because the Jays have spent the money. Rogers has spent the money. It's not like they spent it foolishly in one part and then they couldn't spend anymore. No, they spent as much as Shapiro asked them to spend. And it still looks like this. Why? I understand why the Leafs look like that. They spent their money a certain way. When you can spend all the money, why do you look like the Jays? I don't know. Puzzling, and everyone's kind of seeing it.
It is. It's a good place to leave it. I think they benefit from the fact that this summer we have Euro and Copa and the Olympics around the corner, because normally in the dog days of summer, when we're just focused on this team, I think the temperature would be a lot higher. Thank you, as always, Sydney, for fitting us in. Enjoy the summer of soccer that continues, as obviously our women's national team will be playing in the Olympics. And we have a bunch of Canadians going for gold, and also enjoy some downtime, because you've been grinding, waking up with us every morning. So enjoy some downtime, my friend.
I appreciate it. If Portugal fire their manager, though, let me know, because you're my source for breaking soccer in every way. So please let me know. Call me at any hour. I will accept that call.
Thanks so much to Sid. Wake up with him on City TV. Every morning, he's doing a great job on breakfast television. We started that conversation talking about the mess that TFC finds themselves in. Well, how do they get out of it? And what did we learn from this Copa America experience, both in terms of the viability of the tournament and the strength of the national team? No better person to talk to about that than Devang Desai. Let's go deep with Devang. Right now. All right, Devang, I'll start with the most recent breaking news and something that probably didn't surprise you, because you've been writing about his place in the organization for quite some time. Bill Manning out at TFC, supposedly out at the Toronto Argonauts as well, but really he was more of a caretaker on the CFL side and a driver on the MLS side. Your immediate reaction following the progress of the club this year and the ups and downs of the Manning era or what?
Mm-hmm. I would say long time coming. I've been on the record of not being the biggest Bill Manning fan, and I think you could see that in the piece I wrote for Sportsnet.ca before the season started. But I will start by giving Bill Manning credit in the sense that I think he was someone who knew MLS really well. He knew pro sports really well from the organizations he worked with in both MLS, NFL, et cetera. So when he came to TFC, I think it made sense of why they went after him. But I think you saw the brain drain quickly happen after he arrived, and the departures of Tim Bezbachenko and Greg Vanney were really never recovered from. And the hirings that were made since have all had Bill Manning's fingerprints on them. So I will say when he let people cook, the food tasted great. But when he got in the kitchen himself, it was a bit of a disaster. And I think that's how he got to this point.
My question is, why now? Is the away loss to Forge FC that big of a deal? I mean, you just gave him the license to go recruit and sign Herdman. You are in the midst of a summer transfer window. It's tough to really evaluate this team given the fact that, you know, balance of their better players have been playing for different sides in Copa. I'm just confused as to why on July 11th this move makes sense.
A part of me would love to say it's because the team has been terrible for several years now, but unfortunately I don't think that's why, Donovan. I think this is mainly a Keith Pelley thing, and I think this is an MLSC trying to maybe reorganize things to their liking. And I don't know if you've heard this, but I've heard this from both people outside and inside MLSC, but the idea of the presidents of the sports teams having the power they did began to rankle some people there. So I think removing Bill Manning and allowing Keith Pelley immediate access to these clubs, I think, was going to come. The team not performing well at all maybe help them do this quicker than they would have. Because I'm with you in the sense of, like, if you're going to do this, probably wait till the end of their respective seasons, because the Argos are going as well right now. But this to me says Keith Pelley is taking over. And if I was the president of, let's say, the Toronto Maple Leafs, I'd be wondering about my future as well.
Well, it's interesting because the president structure that they have across MLSC and the org chart really was set by Tim Lewicki, who brought in the, you know, bloody big deal in the real vision and drive for TFC. And so I wonder, when you look at its relative placement among the other brothers and sisters within the company, what do you think this signals for the importance and the spend, quite frankly, for TFC? Because in their best years, I always looked at it and said, this is great, and I understand from a football perspective why they're doing what they're doing, but I've yet to be able to figure out the business case as to how this makes sense or is sustainable.
Yeah, and honestly, me either right now. Like, I think my biggest fear now is that they will take a step back from funding Toronto FC, and I don't mean player transfers, because They've shown no fear in terms of spending in that area. But where TFC has fallen behind, and we're seeing this with the Canadian national team and the players that are on there, as well as who plays for TFC, the academy is not doing its job. And I think when TFC started, that was one of the big, big things. 1B or C, if not 1A, was developing a pipeline, developing a place where our local talent could flourish and become professionals. And frankly, they have not done a good job of that. So if you're also not making money and you're not producing players, then the magnifying glass becomes even bigger. I think Bill Manning trying to get Lorenzo Insigne into this market was a business decision. But overall, I don't know, Donovan, me and you are soccer fans. Like, I just, it didn't scream to me like that made sense at the time, right? So I feel like the plan in place hasn't really been a functioning one for a while. So not only are they hemorrhaging money, but the actual organization is way weaker than it was just a few years ago. So I'm a bit afraid, even though I welcome the news of change, I'm a bit afraid of what this means in terms of the spend that MLSC devotes to to TFC going forward?
It was pretty rudimentary napkin math, it seemed, even in the way it was explained. It was, well, these guys were good on the Italian national team in a major tournament. There's a lot of Italians in the area. We had an Italian that's arguably the best player in the history of the club. And we're hosting a World Cup, and maybe they'll hang around and be relevant for their national team by the time the World Cup comes. So, like, can we just marry all these things? And it just seemed to be not the most sophisticated line of thinking. But here we are. You talk about the development in the pipeline, and I remember people around the club, you know, saying towards the end of the Vanya era that, oh, the kids coming through, you know, they're not going to be playing for this club long because they're going to be making moves to Europe and they're going to be stars on the national team. And to your point, it hasn't happened. I found it interesting that Stephanie Stacchio and Jesse March both post loss to Argentina in the Copa Semis have mentioned a Canadian pipeline, and in some form or fashion mentioned the CPL specifically. Is that just talk, or do you think there's much more there that can be unearthed?
No, I believe it. I mean, let's look at that Forge TFC game, for example. Kwasi Poku, who scored for Forge, ended up being the winning goal, a really well-worked team goal, was at TFC. He was at TFC for a while, but there was no pathway to the first team. And then he decided to leave, and he ended up at Forge FC, where he's 21 years old. But I am confident that he will find a move elsewhere to a higher level. And that only was going to happen because he found playing time at Forge FC. I think Stefan Isaki, obviously his brother works at a club for the league as well, so that plays into it. But I thought that was so important. Like, I wonder how we'll look back at that a few years from now, because I hear the way CPL is discussed in some circles, some Canadian soccer circles, and I understand it's not going to be the Premier League, it's not going to be Serie A, it's not going to be La Liga, but I do think people are missing the forest for the trees, and in the sense that we need this league to work so that we get the depth needed to insulate our best players. And the reason I say that is because I think if you looked at Canada at Copa America, by golly, we've got a lot of good players. We've got maybe even 10 to 11 nailed on consistent starters that can play for the national team. It's elsewhere that I wonder where the depth will come from. And it's not going to be produced by bench players at Vancouver, Montreal, or Toronto, the MLS clubs. It's going to come from youngsters playing a lot of minutes early. And that means the CPL. So I don't know how to make the CPL viable in a business way that's above my pay grade, Donovan, but I think this league is so, so important. And I need it to be shouted out more by the people playing for the national team, et cetera. So I love that from Marcin Eustachio.
Well, a player who similarly didn't get the run of play in the leash maybe that they deserved at the time and had to move elsewhere, although in MLS to star, would be Jacob Schaffelberg, who for me was the star of the tournament for Canada. Now people are talking about him potentially making a move abroad. Honestly, the fact that Schaffelberg is not with TFC might be enough reason for people to get fired, never mind everything that's gone on since. But for you, with this Copa experience and Jesse March kind of doubling down and being willing to play youthful players in high leverage situations, what jumped out to you in terms of the freshness we saw from the side over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think a couple of things from Jesse, I was pleasantly surprised. Not to say that I thought he was like super rigid or didn't adapt, but I did know that he loves his systems and he loves to play soccer or football the way he wants to play. And if you disagree with that, maybe you'll have a hard time getting on with him. But I'd seen no issues with the buy-in, and I also saw excellent man management in terms of substitutions and reading the game. I think every substitution he made, I think, worked in a way. And that says to me that the players who aren't playing are truly buying into this system, into this team. I'm not saying it wasn't like that under John Herdman, but I do think that there was people who knew they were going to play no matter what, and that maybe affected the psyche of of the entire squad, whereas I think Jesse March is allowing the play on the field to speak for itself, and we'll see it in that third place game in terms of who plays. But I do like the idea of play on the field being rewarded. And I look at the center backs especially as one of those answers to a question I had coming into this tournament. The back line at the World Cup was slow. It had experience, but I think you saw teams exploit it on the regular basis. And though they have such little experience together, Bombito and Cornelius, by their play, have secured moves, most likely. Definitely Bombito, but it sounds like Cornelius as well, to a higher profile in Europe as well. I wasn't expecting that. So I think these developments, in the sense of the platform these guys were given and how they took it, was a pleasant surprise, even more so than making it to the semifinals.
It's funny, when you look at those friendlies the team had in Europe, the biggest questions about the group would be the center back partnership and who would have the number one keeper shirt. And now, you know, with one game left, and you know, I expect to see a lot of change in the starting 11. That's generally what you see in a third place game. But you could maybe say the resounding success of this tournament, Schaffelberg aside, would be that center back partnership and the play of Crepeau, even though Bombito a couple times showed, you know, his youth and made some critical mistakes. It's so interesting when you take a team from a level, different things get exposed. And whether it's World Cup qualifying or just in CONCACAF in general, I look at the attack that we have, the amount of depth up front and wingers with pace, and think, well, we're at a different level. And then you just move them to a World Cup stage or a Copa America stage, and just that extra touch matters so much more. And I feel like sometimes, well, I don't feel like, it's fact, we struggled in the final third, which brings me to the, I think, two big questions on this group moving forward as we get ready for 2026. One we've had for a long time: where's the best place on the park for Alphonso Davies?
Yeah.
And then two, one that people have fought about for a long time: can Jonathan David and Kyle Larin, although both individually great, can they play together in a strike partnership in a sport where you rarely see two strikers up top?
Yeah, that's the, I'll take the second one first, I guess, because I don't want to say I'm out on Jonathan David, and I please do not take this as a slander session on JD, but
we're going to have the social team that you run put that and put that out. Devang, out on Jonathan David.
I watched a lot of Lille. I've watched Lille the last few years. Jonathan Davis is really good at what he does, but I wouldn't say that's operating outside of the box and playing those 1-2s with his fellow forwards. I wouldn't say that's his go-to skill. So when we have him for the national team, and I understand why Kyle Larin is there, because I think that hold-up play, you saw it a few times in this tournament, how vital it was. It does feel like they're kind of taking up the same space, and I don't think it does work, to be honest. So I think that, to me, is something that they will have to change going forward. I wanted them to add another body in the midfield against Argentina, maybe include Oso along with Cote and Eustaquio and have Jonathan David up alone. But I'm with you. That, to me, is the ultimate question. And we cannot remove what Kyle Larin has done for this program. I think he single-handedly helped us get through the early parts of 2022 qualifying. But looking at it now, looking at his age, 29, you can do this. I think you can move forward and also maybe introduce some minutes for Theo Bear, who had an amazing season in Scotland as well, or some of the other young guys. You got Tani Oluseio was, I think, a revelation for Canada as well. So there's other players that I would like to see if they do stick with the two forward option.
All makes sense. You didn't answer the Davies question. And for me, I struggle because I understand he is playing in the Champions League at a high level at a very specific position, and it would be very easy just to keep him there. But I also look at them play and I'm thinking to myself, why am I watching?
Why is he there?
Liam Miller waste chances when you could just move Davies further up the pitch and you know, have, you know, Alistair Johnston and Richie Larea, you know, be your partners in the back, and Adekube if he's with the side, and have Davies at least the threat of him closer to goal. But I mean, many smarter minds than me think that you may not get the best of Davies in this setup. You will get the best of the side, but where do you stand?
I tried to dodge it. You got me. I don't think we give enough credit to the absence of Sam Adekube. I think if Adekube was fit, I wonder if they would have played Fonsi further up, but he wasn't, and left back is not a place where they have a ton of depth. But I will say, I think Liam Miller had a really good club season and they wanted to reward him for that. But after Copa, I think we got enough. We got enough of a sample size here where I don't think it works either with him up front in front of Davies. It's tough, man. Like, I think if they had other LB depth, there would be an option for Jesse Marsh there. But I think in this tournament, maybe that's the best they could do. Every other non-Canadian fan who likes soccer asked me why Davies wasn't playing farther up. And I said, basically, they didn't have enough other options. And this goes back to, I guess, what I mentioned off the top regarding the depth generally. I think like 1 to 10, 1 to 11 were okay. But it's at 11 to 23 where there's a lot of holes that they have to plug.
The great part about, you know, watching the sport right now is you get a contrast in styles going from, you know, Copa games at night to Euro games throughout the day, different styles of play, certainly different styles of officiating, I will say, and certainly, you know, different aspects in terms of the management of minutes going straight to pens after the full 90 plus stoppage time in Copa, where you're obviously still getting, you know, extra time in Euro. Being able to compare and contrast, where did your preferences lie?
Ooh, okay. Well, I my back gets up when I encounter a Euro snob, Donovan, and in the sense of like someone who only watches the Premier League or European soccer. So I wanted to say Copa just automatically, but I did have some issues with CONMEBOL in general, and I think the way Euro has kind of played out aesthetically has been a bit more pleasing. I think CONMEBOL really, really did not plan for this Copa America well at all, in the sense of not communicating with security officials who work for American club teams so that maybe they could give them a lay of the land, not coordinating security to separate the fans and the stands, the field size being smaller than regulation pitches, which I think impacted play. Like the Uruguay-USA game at Arrowhead Field, you couldn't take a corner by running up. You were standing still, basically. So I think shoehorning Copa America into America made a lot of sense for business reasons, but the actual planning has not been great. And I think that the scenes you saw in Charlotte after the game between Uruguay and Colombia were a product of that.
Yeah, in many ways, both for the federations, but for everyone, this is a bit of a dress rehearsal for the World Cup in 2026. And I think it showed that there's a ways to go in many aspects. And hopefully when the world is watching, we get a lot of those things ironed out. I'll end with Euro. You've been obviously watching, but, you know, giving us your analysis and your takeaways throughout. We have two teams in the final who got there in entirely different ways. England was, you know, a favorite coming in. Now that we're at the final, Spain is the betting favorite. England's been negative and pessimistic, but they found a way, and Spain has, you know, played some really good stuff. At time, they've allowed possession to be their defender, but also at time, they've really, you know, been on the front foot and played probably the most exciting football in the entire tournament. What do you make of the final, the team's path to get here, and you know, two nations that seemingly continue to see each other in finals recently, whether it's the women's or the under 18 age group, now we'll see it at Euro. What are you expecting?
And it's a wonderful contrast. I'm really excited for this game. I'm not necessarily a huge England national team fan, but I think it's mostly because of their fans. And this tournament was a good reason or a good display, I think, of that. But I'm fascinated, Donovan, by the kids, Yamal and Nico Williams, against the England fullbacks, or however they choose to set up. I know they've had three center backs back there, but I think Williams and Yamal have been the standouts, my favorite parts of the tournament in terms of just a joy to watch and people who bring an element to the game that was sorely lacking in parts. So I want to see those guys against an England defense that's been good, but I don't necessarily think they've been tested that much by the skill that Spain possesses. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to another kind of signature moment from Bukayo Saka, because I think we saw someone who's maybe a bit more mild-mannered than the other star players on England kind of break through in a huge way in this tournament, and I'd love to see it in the final.
You mentioned Yamal. I saw a stat, and it honestly, it blew my mind. He was 12 when COVID started. Like, it's just wild.
What?
How young he was. How young he is. And now, you know, he's at the you know, the biggest stage, playing, you know, for a game for his life, and in you know given, you know, health and performance, this could be the first of many for him. Before we go, we have to get your prediction. Who are you tipping your hat for to lift the trophy?
It's been a brutal Euros for my prediction, so I won't tell you what I've said beforehand, but give me England.
Well, You had Portugal winning it all?
I had Portugal in the final four. I had Belgium
in
the final four.
You had Portugal, Croatia in the final?
I had Belgium in the final four. So like I said, let's skip over that. But give me England in extra time, though. Before penalties, 2-1, a winner comes. How about that?
Well, they'll go from throwing beer at Southgate to, you know, drenching him,
be knighted on the field,
champagne.
The king will come down on the field, I'm assuming, and do it right there.
Yeah, that's right. Listen, it's been a great tournament. It's been a great summer, certainly for sport, and certainly for the world's favorite sport in soccer. Looking for that momentum to continue into the Olympics, where we might have some big names playing, you know, on the men's side. I'm crossing my fingers, but given Mbappe's bad form and bad injury, I don't know if he'll be suiting up for France as some people had hoped. But the women's tournament will be outstanding, and we know you'll be covering it all. So thank you. But lastly, before I let you go, I've got to get some tennis in here,
please.
Wimbledon,
let's go.
I wouldn't say taking a backseat given all the soccer that's gone on, but it's been less of a driving conversation in our country, only for the uninspiring results for our Canadians specifically, and a couple big names that are household names being out. But the drama of, you know, winning at Wimbledon, I would argue, is only rivals maybe the Masters in terms of individual sport. What has intrigued you about the draw so far?
I would say I think the women's side is had a top four emerge in the recent weeks and years, but I think the parity and the strength from 1 to 100 of the players remains a key asset for the women's game. And we've seen that at this Wimbledon, a semifinal between Donna Vekic and Jasmine Paolini, maybe on paper doesn't scream masterclass or an epic, but it was an actual great match. And I think it'll go down as one of the best of the year, but that's the kind of stuff I think that you see at Wimbledon. You get these out of your body performances from players who have been waiting for this for a long time. So I love that aspect. And potentially, I know we got a ways to go before we get there, but I know Sunday's a huge day, Copa final, Euro final, but maybe Alcaraz Djokovic again as a repeat wouldn't be a bad start to the day on Sunday.
Can't wait to sit on my couch for the entire day.
The whole day. It's going to be great.
Ignore my family. Yeah, it's going to be outstanding. Thank you so much. Enjoy it, because I know I'm looking forward to it as well.
Cheers, Donovan. Thanks, man.
Thanks so much to Sid and Devang. Both, I know, will be enjoying
the games this weekend, probably on a patio with a nice drink. I hope that you can do the same, and I hope that these games live up to the hype and the anticipation, because it's been a real fun tournament. Can't wait to see how both of them, quite frankly, end. Let us know who you want to hear from in the coming days. And while you're at it, feel free to like, favorite, share, and subscribe if you enjoyed this episode. I mean, you made it to the end, so I suppose you did. Thank you. Be sure to share it with a friend. Thanks so much for listening. Take care.